And good morning to you. Glenn Andreessen here beside you now for the next hour, or at least till noon. And here beside me, Jim Gilbert of One Green World.
Good morning, Glenn.
As full disclosure, we'll mention that Jim is involved with One Green World. Okay, he's the owner of One Green World. And we're happy to have him here, as usual, every second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock.
It's my pleasure. Great pleasure to be here.
Indeed. Well, we've got another good show lined up for you today, even. And we'll start out with some events that we're involved with and things that are going on. Jim, you take it away.
All right. Well, I'm sure all the listeners out there have got their legal pads ready and ready to write fast as I say all these things. But this is really the time for gardening events. So I'll go over these, and there's some really great ones coming up.
Let me just mention that we'll be getting these posted on the KBOO website and the Dirtbag section of the KBOO website. So.
Yeah, and we can also go to onegreenworld.com to our website, too, and see them.
Okay, so, some of those, yeah.
Yeah. So this coming weekend, for the folks in the southern part of the valley, Corvallis, Eugene, Albany, there's the Eugene Home and Garden Show. That's going to be Thursday and Friday evenings and Saturday and Sunday. I like this show because it's free. Not only is the admission free, but the parking is free. So it's a really cool show. A lot of really great ideas about sustainable living. A lot of plants on display. I'm also going to be talking on growing fruit on both Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m. And this is at the Lane County Convention Center right in Eugene.
Not the fairgrounds, the convention center.
Well, it's
part of that.
I think it's the fairgrounds too.
Okay,
you know,
okay.
They seem to mix them up there. So
okay,
yeah, and that's a great show. So anybody want to drive down the southern part of the valley? Come on over and see us. Then next weekend after this coming one, there are two really interesting events. One is the Lansu Chinese Garden Plant Sale at the Chinese Garden, and that's from 10 to 4. The Chinese Garden's in downtown on Northwest 3rd in Flanders in Portland. There's going to be a lot of really interesting Chinese-themed plants there. So that'd be a good show to take advantage of. And also, if you buy a plant, you get a 2-for-1 admission to the garden.
And if
you haven't been to the garden, it's a pretty cool place. I mean, I love the architecture and all the neat plants they have there. Another really special and very unique event that same weekend and the same day is the Home Orchard Society Spring Propagation Fair. And for all you fruit nuts out there, this is the place to be.
That's a good one, fruit nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is really a cool place. There's a lot of really great folks there, you know, probably the most knowledgeable growers of fruit in our region will come there and bring their cyanwood, which if some of you don't know what cyanwood is, these are like the cuttings taken from your special fruit tree. They have rootstock that you can put that cyan upon. You can create your own fruit tree. If you've got a special tree in your yard, it's getting a little late to cut a piece of cyanwood, but this has been such a cool spring that you could probably get an apple, piece of apple wood, and take it there. And you want to make more of that tree, take it down there, and they'll help you out. And that's actually going to be at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby.
Starting at 10, I believe?
10 to 5 on Saturday.
That's right.
And
nominal admission there.
Yeah. I can't remember how much the admission is. A little bit.
Yeah.
But parking's free.
Yep.
So that's a good thing, too. The following weekend, so we're talking not – so this week, coming weekend, the next weekend is the Home Orchard Society and the Chinese Garden. And the following weekend is the Better Living Show here at our own Portland's Expo Center.
That's right.
That's another cool event, which talks a lot about sustainable stuff and it'll have some plants and – a lot of nice booths to go to. That's on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And we're both speaking at that one.
Are we?
And that's free, I believe.
Hopefully not at the same time.
I don't think so. I think we're on the same track. So
yeah, I'm Saturday at 1.
I'm Friday. Actually, I'm doing a couple of them year-round. No, beginning vegetable gardening at 3, I believe, and then backyard beekeeping intro. We'll say at 5 on Friday.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Great.
So
yeah.
Those are free events.
Yeah, it's a free event. The admission is free to the show. You do have to pay for parking, however.
If you park there.
Or take Max.
That's right. Drops you right off within a block or three.
And just also, you know, a couple of other things. There's the Japanese garden plant sale which will be on it's April 23rd.
We'll have another show before then.
That's right. Yep. So we don't need to
go into that.
Not to confuse people with any further of these things. So,
and I'll continue to list the urban growth bounty classes that are available in the next month on the website. There's things from vegetable gardening to I'm doing beekeeping class, cheese making, other things like that in the I'll post those.
Yeah, it's just a fun time for plants and bees. And
there's no excuse for not finding something to learn about if you're so inclined.
That's right. And there's actually one more I should mention too. I think it'll be happening before our next show, which is Garden Palooza.
Oh yeah,
in Canby, kind of near I-5, at a place called Fir Point Farms. It's a garden center, and that's kind of a neat event too. They will have a lot of people there and a lot of local nurseries will be showing off their plants. Some things will, like jasmines and stuff, will be in bloom. So for some eye and nose candy, that's a good one to come to. That's on
okay,
Saturday.
So we'll get those posted on the website as we have time. Now, if you have an event that you would like us to mention on the air, you can get a hold of me through the KBOO website and send me an email that way, and we'd be happy to spread the word. So speaking of word, we have a new segment now on the Dirtbag, or at least we're starting it today, the first monthly, the plant of the month.
Uh-huh.
And Jim had an excellent suggestion for the first one, kiwis.
Yes.
So all about kiwis. We dedicated 10 or 15 minutes to this if we need to. But also, let me point out that we will open the phones for your gardening questions in a short while. So if you have a gardening question, you can call us 503-231-8187. So, and at 10:30, we'll have the garden stumper. So stay tuned.
All right. Suspense. when I give a talk on kiwis, usually people are in an audience and they can raise their hands. And since I can't see our dear listeners raising their hands, they can raise their telephone handset and give us a call if there's a question about kiwis in particular. Well, kiwis are a really interesting family of plants. They're all native to the Asian continent, to the eastern side of it, China and eastern Russia and some other Asian countries. And I wrote a recent article saying basically from northern Minnesota to California, there's a kiwi for you.
Hmm.
So Oregon is sort of located right in this zone between those areas, and we can grow just about all the edible kiwis here. The first one, which we're all familiar with, is the fuzzy kiwi. It's been around for quite a while. A very interesting vine. Its characteristics are high vigor, and some of the listeners may have these and know how fast they can grow and how much long shoots they can put out and all.
And how long is that, roughly? For the uninitiated here,
well,
I'm thinking about putting one in, two in, as we'll find out.
Yeah, if they're getting reasonable care, reasonable fertilizer and water in the summer, 8 to 10 feet they can put out in 1 year.
Okay.
Growth. Fuzzy kiwi, its primary requirements to grow it are a strong arbor or trellis and pruning. If you prune it reasonably well and don't let it get too rangy, you can get over 100 pounds of fruit off one plant.
Well, that reminds me then to ask, how strong should the trellis be?
Well, it should be more than 2x2s in string. I recommend if a 4x6 corner post. If you imagine, say, a rectangle 6 feet wide by 12 feet long.
So the posts are 6 feet apart on the ends and...
Yeah, okay. And then you can have 12 feet in length. You could put a post in between, or you could probably use a 2x8 or something to span that whole distance. That would be an ideal arbor for two fuzzy kiwis because you need a male and a female.
Okay.
And put the male at one end, put the female at the other end, and then leave about 3/4 of the space in that arbor for the female and about 1/4 for the male because it's just there for flowers and...
Doesn't produce any fruit.
Doesn't produce any fruit. So that's your basic structure that you start with. And from there, you get your plant, you plant it appropriately and get it growing, and it will grow up. And you want to get it to the top of that arbor and then create a couple of cordons, permanent branches, you could say, that will be there for the life of the plant. Once you, and that takes maybe a couple of years to get that all well established.
Will you talk about acquiring the plants and planting them later on, or shall we cover that now?
Well, we can certainly cover that now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about varieties and how to plant, maybe?
Sure. So fuzzy kiwis, and we could probably do the whole show just on fuzzy kiwis. Yeah. So essentially the variety we buy in stores, and the one that actually we seem to grow most here, is a variety called Hayward. And you might guess from its name, it actually came from New Zealand, but originally, of course, it came from China, and New Zealand breeders selected this because of its nice form, taste, and all of the good parts about it. So that's the one that seems to be the most popular. There's one also from Vancouver Island, called Sanichton, Sanichton, which is not quite as attractive in that sense of store attractiveness as Hayward, but it does ripen a little bit earlier, and it's also a very, very good variety. So those are kind of the two most popular female ones right now. And you can get them usually either in a container or in some cases bare root, and it doesn't really matter, but I right now would be a good time to plant. I am assuming, by all indications of my entire life history, that we are past the time of temperatures in the teens.
That was pretty rare.
That was pretty rare.
Earlier.
So thinking that we're out of those woods, it's time to plant. And I think I might have mentioned earlier in a previous show about when you plant a container plant, the importance of loosening up those roots and spreading them out, and digging a hole big enough that you can have some roots out to the side and get those roots established. And then another thing is, don't put anything in that hole except what came out of it. Then you can mulch with compost or manure on the surface.
One question here about you said that there were these two main female varieties. What do we need to know about the male variety for buying one?
Males are pretty much commonly males. There's not really any varieties indicated anymore. There used to be a couple of different ones running around, but now the male that most people use is what they call Chico male. It came out of California, and
it's compatible with
with
all varieties.
All varieties of females. They all bloom at the same time.
All varieties of the fuzzy kiwi,
Kiwi. And if you want to make a segue now into the hardy kiwi,
we might as well.
Okay, sure. So the second type of kiwi that we can grow is called the hardy kiwi. I call it that anyway. Some people call it kiwi grapes or baby kiwis. There's been some other names bandied about, but hardy kiwi is what we call it. And it's a smaller fruit than the fuzzy kiwi. Smooth skin, no fuzz, eat it like a grape. It has the same vigorous characteristic as the fuzzy kiwi. So you want to have a good, strong arbor or trellis for it. And it can still grow out those long shoots. And so they need support. And it can bear 100 pounds of fruit. The fruit is quite different to me than the fuzzy kiwi. Besides the fact it doesn't have fuzz, I love the flavor.
Yeah.
I
actually prefer them to the fuzzy.
Yeah. Sweeter, more flavorful.
Easier to eat.
Yeah. It really is a wonderful fruit. The main disadvantage of it is, while the fuzzy kiwi you can keep in a cool room for several months, in a garage or someplace where it's not getting frozen, hardy kiwi really you can only store it for about a month in a refrigerator. So
there's
something with it.
Yeah.
Eat it.
100 pounds in the next month.
Yeah, that's right. You will be very, very healthy. Vitamin C content is off the charts. So it does require the same arbor type of thing, some kind of strong trellis. And also it's a male and female. Same rules apply.
Now, so the male you need a special male pollinator for the fuzzy and a special one for the hardy?
Their species, the fuzzy kiwi is Actinidia deliciosa, that's the Latin name, and the hardy kiwi is Actinidia arguta.
Okay.
And typically you get a male of the same species for pollination. My first experience with hardy kiwi was back in the mid-80s in Aurora, where they were pollinating a female with a male fuzzy kiwi, and quite successfully. So they bloom at pretty much the same time, and I think a person can be reasonably confident that if you have a male of one, it will probably pollinate both females.
Okay. So you might get by with three plants.
Yes, I think you could do that. And then another thing that I think it's important to realize, besides we talked about the arbor and we mentioned pruning, and it's getting a little bit late right now, but I think it still could be done. My wife doesn't care about pruning late. What I find, if you prune kiwis after end of January, they bleed. Mm-hmm. But it's not apparently a critical issue. But the main thing with pruning a kiwi is that it bears flowers and fruits off of wood that grew last year.
Would you say they're similar to grapes?
Yes.
And
similar to grapes, more vigorous than grapes. That's why you can grow a grape on a fence, a vertical fence, where you really a kiwi isn't going to be happy.
A grape will put on long growth, but it's not as heavy as the kiwi would.
Yeah, yeah. So there's definite difference there.
Okay.
Yep. And kiwi pruning is a little different. When you have that we talked about, this long shoot that comes out every year, 8 to 10 feet long,
mm-hmm.
Prune it back to maybe take 2/3 of that off. And leave 8 to 12 buds, the basal buds.
On each lateral coming from the cordon?
Yes.
This overhead branch?
That's right. And these are the annual, this is the annual growth grew last year.
And how many buds then per plant?
Well, it depends on how big the plant is, of course. But if you space those branches out about a foot apart on your uh-huh. arbor, you could have quite a few.
Okay. Well, the rule of thumb for grapes roughly is around 30 buds per plant.
You're going to have a lot more on a kiwi.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's another difference then.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you prune those back, the new shoots that come off of those buds are going to have the flowers and the fruit.
And that's what grew the laterals. Which are, let me just see if I can summarize this here.
We've got visualize.
So eventually and how many years might it take to get these cordons that come off the main trunk that we'll just assume are overhead?
If the first year things are going well, you'll get your main trunk up to the top of the trellis.
Okay.
Second year, you tip that back. You choose a couple of shoots that come off up that upper part of the trunk to become the cordons. So second year is building the cordons. If everything goes well, you'll have your cordons built. The third year, you should start getting side shoots.
So off of this cordon, then we'll grow these laterals.
Laterals,
and we'll call them, and we're going to shorten. We're going to take about 2/3 of that growth off of those.
Yes,
but we're not necessarily going to leave every one of these laterals. You said space them about a foot apart.
Yeah, if for some reason they were really dense, you'd want to space them out a bit and then tie them down to your arbor so they stay in place and they're not crossing over each other. And
the laterals or the cordons?
The laterals.
Okay.
The cordons will also need support. They need to be, but they're going to be there for a long time.
Okay, so now on back to the kiwi here, Jim Gilbert, Glenn Andreessen here with you. We are pruning now about 2/3 of the new growth off of these laterals, leaving how many buds per whatever is there?
Yeah, like 8 to 12 buds.
On the lateral.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And take off after that lateral fruit, so you'll have, so as the years go by, you will have new laterals and you'll have old wood, and take off the old wood
because it's no longer productive after it.
It'll make some fruit, but you'll get a lot better production from those new laterals
using new ones. Okay.
Now this is the optimum pruning method, and with this you will get lots and lots of fruit. If you miss a year or something, it's not the end of the world. You'll still get fruit. This is just the way to get the maximum yield from them.
But if you miss a year, then you've got a lot of growth to deal with, and it's going to take over the neighbors. And
that's right. Get your pruners and sharpen them and get busy. But you can make wreaths out of all those extra shoots, I hear.
And you suggest before the end of January would be good, but maybe you could do it to the end of February.
You can still do it now.
Yeah, I've been pruning grapes, but things are late this year.
They're very late. Amazed how late things are. And so that's a brief covering of the fuzzy and the hardy kiwi. I don't think we missed too much on those. But then there's a third variety, which a lot of people like, which is called the Arctic Beauty kiwi. And this one is a lot less vigorous than the other two. So you don't need this strong arbor or trellis for it. It's one of its primary characteristics is it likes shade.
The others like full sun?
Full to half-day sun.
Okay.
Arctic Beauty likes shade. So on the north side of a wall or a fence is a perfect place for it. And people have places where they have some
shade. Oh, boy,
shade,
do they, you know? Especially in the city.
Yeah.
So houses make shade. Big trees make shade, yeah.
Yeah, so Hardy Beauty is a really nice plant. It has similar smooth skin fruit, like the hardy kiwi, nice flavored fruit. You eat it like a grape. It isn't as productive because it's not as big a plant and it's not as vigorous, but another interesting characteristic of it is its beautiful foliage, especially the male plant. It's outrageous. It's so striking, and it's interesting to me how it develops that variegated foliage. Most variegated plants, when they start to grow, they have variegation. It's just with them all their life.
And this means, explain what variegation is on leaves.
Multicolors.
Okay.
On the leaf. Most plants, like I can think of a variegated silverberry I have at my place. It comes out with a yellow and green leaf, yellow blotches within the green. But with Arty Beauty Kiwi, what happens, the leaves come out green, and then it's like nature paints them, first white and then pink. So when they get fully colored, I mean, they are really striking. And I think that this is probably was developed by the plant as a way to attract insects because the flowers are kind of indistinct. But, boy, the foliage,
Does it need a pollinizer? Well, a male plant?
Yes, the same.
Same thing.
It's Arty Beauty just like the others.
So it's not
self-fertile.
Okay.
Yeah, need a male and a female. But again, it's really a beautiful plant, and some people in years past used to plant just the male for the colorful foliage, and didn't even know there was a female that you could get fruit from.
Uh-huh. Well, that's another plant to put in on the list for another edible plant to put in shade loving.
Yeah, and there aren't too many.
Yeah, let's see. Would currants? They can be. Somewhat shady.
Evergreen huckleberry.
Okay.
Our native evergreen huckleberry is a plant that likes shade. It's one that comes to mind. But there aren't, you know, most plants develop their best sweetness and stuff when they have some sun. So, But kiwis are this wonderful family of plants, and there's some other members of it too. But those are the three that produce the most fruit and are most widely planted for that purpose.
Okay, so the main thing is to get a sturdy trellis.
Yes. What nice thing about it, another advantage of kiwis is they don't need to be sprayed. There's no pest or disease problems. So they're great organic fruits. And just maybe a word about watering and fertilizing. They like to be watered in the summer, but sporadically, deep watering once a week. Don't keep them wet because they really don't like that. The roots will not be happy. And the fuzzy and hardy kiwi, the sort of rule of thumb is that once the plant gets going, probably the first year wouldn't be necessary, but once it starts growing, when it's up to about 5 years old, it should get a half a pound of actual nitrogen a year put on in the spring. So if you...
That's quite a bit, really.
Yeah, if you have a fertilizer like, say, chicken manure that's 5% nitrogen, you would want to put, to get a half a pound, you'd want to put 10 pounds of it around in the root zone of the plant.
So
they grow really well. Now, of course, if you want to not have them grow well, you can not do that.
Which is maybe the case. If you could be happy with 4 to 6 feet of growth, then and you might try it first of just putting on judicious amounts of compost every year.
Yeah.
And see if that's enough nitrogen and other nutrients there to.
Yeah. It's not half a pound, and then after 5 years they recommend a pound, but that's again for commercial production.
Yeah,
so
right.
You know, for the homeowner, you don't need to have that much.
Okay, well, that's it on kiwis.
Yeah, I think so, and hopefully people will just go out there and start planting some of those guys. You know?
Well, one of these days we'll have to. The next tree that I'm going to be planting is pawpaw, and maybe we'll feature that as a plant of the month. Sometime at some point.
But. Certainly, we could do that. In fact, we could even ask our listeners to suggest plants they'd like to hear more about.
Okay.
In detail.
Well, you've got lots of reasons to call, and now we have it's time for another reason to call. If we're ready to run it, because you know what time it is now, Jim, don't you?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm nervous as always. Actually, this time I'm not so nervous.
Okay. Okay, it's time for the Garden Stumper. And Jim suggested this one. You can ask away, Jim.
Okay. So I ask the modified version or the first
Yeah, the
version?
One that we have down here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's see.
The one that I've come up with here.
Yes, okay. this is slightly tricky.
Yes.
We have to let listeners know this.
We don't make it easy here.
No, that's right. The prizes are very, very valuable, so people have to work hard to win them. Okay, so the question is, what insect pollinates olives here in Oregon?
Okay. That's it. So if you have the answer to this Garden Stumper, 503-231-8187. And by the way, that's the same number that you'll call to ask questions, because we're ready for your questions now. We'll also move into the vegetables segment now of what is going on in the garden and what will be going on in the garden in spring. Yes, we are into the springtime now.
Yes, yes.
Yesterday was very nice here.
I mean,
nice as it's been this year. You know, the warmest it's been so far this year, we haven't broken 60 yet, was 59 set on January 12th.
Wow.
So yesterday's 57 was... Wow.
Yeah, it does feel nice when it gets a little warmer, doesn't it?
That's right. Yeah. Okay, well, we're still waiting for a question or an answer to the question of what insect pollinates olives here in Oregon. Uh-oh. We have a kiwi question from Mona.
Oh, hi. Am I on the air?
Yep, you're ready to go.
So I didn't hear your segment, so I apologize if you already addressed this, but I just heard the tail end, and I heard you were talking about kiwis. And I have a hardy kiwi plant. When I bought it, I was told that you don't need male and female, but I've yet, on my third year, yet to have fruit. And then the other part I should say about that is that I've had it against a brick wall, and it's been a south-facing brick wall. It's been frying every year. We just moved it against a wooden structure, still pretty much south-facing, and thinking it'll do better.
Yes. Well, the location sounds fine. Actually, hardy kiwis will grow in California, where temperatures get up into the 110, 115 range. So heat usually doesn't bother them as long as you have adequate water for those hot spells. The issue of pollination, years ago, we had a variety called Isai. We still do offer that variety, and we were told that it was self-fertile, and in fact, we would occasionally get a fruit off of it, but it wasn't reliable for us, and we stopped advertising it as being self-fertile.
Mona, do you know what variety yours is?
I think it's the Isai that you mentioned.
Okay.
But there is also the issue of flowering, and I suspect has it flowered yet? Have you seen?
It would flower, and then no fruit would come.
Yeah, yeah. So
I wasn't fertilizing it properly, from what I taught about what you were saying, how much fertilizer they want.
Well, if it's flowering and it gets pollination, it should set fruit. Now the Isai, as I said, it does have the potential of setting a few fruit without. I never got more than just a few. And if it did set fruit without pollination, the fruit would not have seeds in it. But I think that your best bet is to get a male, and then you'll for sure have a good productive plant. Because Isai is a very productive variety, and it's very nice for good quality. I think you'll have much better luck if you plant a male along with it.
And does the male need to be in the same location or close by in the sun also?
It shouldn't be too far away, because bees are the primary pollinators for it. So you want it close enough that they can find both plants and know to go back and forth.
Okay, that makes sense. And then also pruning, is there a certain pruning time and method?
Yeah, we're sort of at the end, probably maybe slightly past the end of pruning time, although as we mentioned earlier, it's been so cool that I think you could get away with pruning it now. And I don't know how the plant is growing, but if you've got new, fairly long shoots that came from last year's growth, if you cut those back, those are the ones that are going to produce the flowers and the fruit. And one thing you might be able to do if you get flowers this year is to find a neighbor with a male. It's not totally impossible to do that. Not as common
male,
as I'd like.
A male plant, I believe he means.
Yeah, yes.
A male neighbor and have him come over and pollinate.
Yeah, that would be nice if that would work. And then the other issue about pruning is to remove some of the older wood that's flowered and doesn't. It's just kind of weak, small wood. You don't really need that on there. You're main effort is going to be to try to keep new wood coming on that's nice and strong.
And just a word about pruning in general. That's really why we prune, to get renewal
like
wood.
On new wood, fruits grow on new wood.
Yeah, right. They grow on laterals that grew on last year's growth.
Yeah.
Okay, like a grape.
Indeed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, we did cover some of this stuff earlier. We're sorry that you
missed it there.
I missed it.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay, Kelly. Or is it Callie? I'm sorry.
Callie.
Okay.
Hi. I have a question about, I'm interested in growing stuff that's hard to find in farmers markets and usually find at expensive restaurants and stuff, mainly broccoli rabe and fava beans. And I just have a general question on advice on growing those two items.
Fire away. Do you have a specific question?
No, is now the time to plant them? Are there any tricks?
It's a little early for the broccoli, Rob. And just treat it like broccoli. I mean, it's the same kind of requirements. They're pretty hardy. You could start them inside now, certainly.
Okay.
And that's something that I'll address here later on in the show about which seeds are good to start and what not. But I wouldn't plant them outside yet. The weather has just not really.
Does Jim carry them at One Green World?
We don't do seeds.
They don't do seeds.
No, the starts.
No, they don't do that either.
We're pretty much fruit-centric.
Right. But I'm sure there are others, and you could get a packet of seeds and put them in the ground in mid-April and be very satisfied with the results. I mean, it's that easy.
Okay.
They're pretty hardy. Right. And the favas, you might be able to get by with planting the favas now. I planted peas yesterday, first seeds in the ground yesterday. And I can, if we have enough time, I'll talk about what my procedure was for planting those peas, but it's a pretty easy one too.
Why are they so hard to find at farmers markets, these two things? I mean,
well, there's a lot of labor involved in the rabe, and since they're sold generally by weight, I think that's part of it.
But what about fava beans? I mean,
well, I don't know that people would be willing to pay, because you pay for these huge beans and you only eat you pay for the pods, and the beans inside are pretty, not much return there either. So they might have to charge 15 or 18 bucks a pound, and I don't know if anybody's going to do that. This is my speculation.
Okay. All right, well,
but
I
wouldn't doubt it at all if it's an economic decision, because they're not hard to grow.
Okay. Good deal.
Thank you so much. You bet.
Bye-bye.
Kurt, where are we at here? Annalisa, you're up next.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question about chestnut trees, edible chestnuts.
All right.
And a few years ago, maybe 6 years ago, I got two starts that somebody gave me, and I planted them, and they grew, and they are huge trees now. But only on one tree do I once in a while have some fruit. And I have a neighbor down the street who has one huge chestnut tree, and they have an enormous crop every year. And I was wondering why I don't get any fruit on my trees.
I think probably it's just the age of the tree, Annalisa. If the tree will get older and do better, these are, I'm sure, are seedlings, and that just takes time for them to mature. So I think if you be patient with it, it'll eventually start producing a good crop.
Nut trees generally are not as precocious, as we say, as fruit. That is to say, they don't bear early.
Oh.
How old did you say the seedling is now?
About 6 years, 5 or 6 years, and they're huge trees.
Yeah,
they're probably already. Well, I don't know exactly, but they're tall trees.
Not as big as your neighbors.
Oh no!
Yeah,
no. They give me their crop because they cannot eat them, so they offer me and other people their crop, and it's delicious, and I love chestnuts. But mine, and I was given these starts by somebody that had an orchard of chestnuts, and that's how I used to buy them from them, and mm-hmm. then they gave me some starts, and they took right away, but hardly any fruit. And if there is some fruit, like maybe 12 or 20, then there are two small nuts in the shell. Two small ones.
Yeah,
yeah. Oftentimes there's like an empty one, is what you're saying, and then there's a full one.
Yeah.
And they're pollinated by bees, believe it or not, or other insects.
Oh, yeah. So I believe it.
So you're probably getting pollination from your neighbor's tree. That's what. If you didn't have pollination, all those nuts would be empty.
Yeah. Did you get a question to the olive part?
No, we're still waiting for that. What?
Bees? Are they bees?
Nope. Okay. Now remember, this is we'll just start giving hints here. This is a trick question.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. Yeah, I cannot imagine what that would be. But anyway.
Well, there's really only two other options here, but we'll wait and see.
About fava beans, 1 year, and unfortunately, I didn't keep any of the beans because I had a variety, and I don't remember what it was, and they were small fava beans, and they were so delicious. I love them anyway, the large ones too, but these were very small, small pods and small beans inside, and yeah. I cannot remember what they were.
And I think that the favas are probably come true. I don't think they're hybrids, but that's the way it goes. You know, that's when we talk about seed crop, you know, right? Okay,
thank
well,
you
good
very
luck.
Much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, so Steve's up.
Are
you there? Are you there, Steve?
Hi, yes.
Okay.
Yes, my question is about mushrooms. I see the Northwest varieties, the wild ones, being sold in the store. And how much are they cultivated on farms in the area? Do you have any knowledge of that?
Boy, I don't have any knowledge. Jim?
I don't know.
That's kind of a specialized industry. And to tell you the truth, I don't know how many varieties are actually propagated. You know, there's these button ones. And there, I'm sure there are others, but
shiitake is one that, of course, the people were growing on wood oak logs. But I don't know.
I only know those two, but I see things all packaged up in the store, so I was curious.
Yeah, sorry, we can't help you on that.
No, I'll go foraging. That's all right. Thank you, though.
That's not a bad way to spend an afternoon too, getting wet and, I mean, looking for. You know, I understand that sometimes mushroom pickers get lost because they've got their heads down and they're wandering, and then they look up and nothing looks familiar.
A story I'd like to tell sometime is gathering pine cones in the Russian forest around Vladivostok, which is sort of similar. It's an interesting story. Maybe next time.
You ended up in a concentrate or a boot camp or something there.
Well, it's quite a competitive experience, I found out.
Oh,
there's a lot of other people looking for the same
thing.
Yes, I
see. Okay, well, that'll be another time there then. So. Okay, well, let's move on to, if there are no further questions out there, so 503-231-8187 is the number if you have a gardening question. But meanwhile, should we just talk about a little bit about olive pollination here, just give them the answer?
Sure.
It was a trick question.
Yeah.
It was a trick question.
Yeah.
In fact, it doesn't rely on insects at all.
No. In fact, olives are pollinated by wind.
But, see, the other possibility here was that they were self-fertile and that they just maybe had a fruit without
pollination.
Any type of, yeah.
Well, I don't know of any olives that actually bear fruit without pollination. As far as I know, they all need to be pollinated.
Yeah.
And there are varieties that require a mate of a different variety nearby for pollination. Or there are ones like Arbequina, which is a Spanish variety, which is self-fertile. But as I've explained,
self-fertile meaning that they still need, though.
Its pollen will pollinate its own flower.
And is the pollen produced in the same flower, or does it need to come from another part of the plant to that?
It needs to come. It's in the same flower, but it doesn't travel easily from it. It needs the wind to move it.
Okay.
And what interesting thing about that is that, as you imagine, a lot of people will just have room for one tree. Then you don't have such good luck with the wind unless you had a little tornado.
Swirling it up and
swirling
down.
Swirling around.
Yeah.
So
So
what I recommend to folks from my own experience is that when your olive is blooming, take a little brush and move the pollen around from flower to flower, because then you'll get nice fruit set. Otherwise, you'll get some without doing that, but you get a lot more if you do.
Unless you live in Almsville.
Almsville.
Well, he had this tornado.
Oh, there you go. Right. Yeah. Rush down there and put your olive in the way
perfect.
Of the middle. So yeah, that was a trick question.
Trick question, but it was too easy otherwise, I thought.
Well, we'll try to come up with something next time.
So nobody won our no prizes. As we have here. Maybe someday we'll have something here, but okay.
I'll take home the Mercedes then.
Yeah. Yeah. Go. Everybody else goes home empty-handed. All right, Kurt, was that a call? Okay. Well, then we can talk about peas. And generally the packets of peas will say plant, you know, in early February or as early as the ground can be worked. But, of course, if you did that this year, you probably have rotting peas because it's just too cold to get them germinated. That's the main problem there. And as we talked with Will Newman last week on raised beds, the nice thing about a raised bed is that it dries out sooner, so then it can heat up sooner.
Yeah.
Because it won't heat up until it dries out. Yeah. And that's the problem here in Oregon, and especially this year with these cold temperatures. Yesterday was the one more weather factoid here. It was the first day in almost 3 weeks where we were above average temperature.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that's kind of hard to take for us gardeners. But what I do with my peas is I've put them in the same bed for years, 10 or 12 more years, because it's a narrow bed, gets good sun, and it's not used for really anything else. It's so narrow. And we don't want to confuse a cold weather crop like peas and broccoli or lettuce and spinach that will do well in cold weather. We don't want to equate that with shade.
Right.
They still need the sun.
Yes.
And so what I do with my peas, or what I did with the peas, is this bed has very good tilth. That is to say, the quality of the soil is good. It's got lots of organic matter. But I still add more organic matter. So what I did was, before I did anything for soil prep, and it's not much soil prep, is sprinkled some, normally I would use rock dust or glacial dust, which is a good way to supply micronutrients. But I didn't have any of that, so I used kelp meal, which is about 18 times as expensive, but I did it anyway. A little bit of fertilizer, very little bit, for a 12-foot-long row, probably used a cup of organic fertilizer.
What kind do you use?
It's a fish fertilizer, a pellet or granular, organic. And then some eggshells, maybe a cup or two of eggshells on the top. Our soils are notoriously short of calcium. And then I sprinkled a little bit of compost on top of that, took a hoe and just hoed a row. That's it. Just the row, not the whole bed, just where I was going to draw a line for my pea seeds. Then I did it with the hand, just because I like to feel the soil. It feels pretty good this time of year.
Especially when it's warm.
Yeah. And just drew about an inch deep line in the soil, put in peas pretty thickly. That's what we do with peas. And then they can help themselves grow up too. So probably a pea every half to three quarter inch, that mm-hmm. thickly. Mm-hmm. And particularly this early in the season, you're going to give up some probably they'll just rot because they don't germinate soon enough.
What kind of peas?
These were sugar snap. They're a pole, edible pod, whole pod pea, a sugar pod pea, but this variety is called sugar snap.
Excellent variety.
My favorite. Yeah. It's not as immune to ination virus, but it's worth it growing it for me anyway. Mm-hmm. So then with my hand, I just covered it up, the soil about, the seeds about, half to an inch. And then here's what I do differently than many, is that I've been saving old small panes of glass. And these are probably 9 by 12 inches mm-hmm. or so. And I lay those down on the row, make just flat on the soil, making a little greenhouse effect under the soil there. So when the sun comes out, that soil will heat up. Mm-hmm. And then I check it starting in a week or so to make sure that when the peas are starting to come up that I can remove that glass then. But you wouldn't have to use glass. You could use plastic.
Clear plastic.
Yeah. Or, I can't think of anything else. I mean, anything that's clear that will help the sun heat up. And in some respects, keep some of the rain off. And of course, you need moist soil, but
I don't think it's going to be a problem.
No, it was plenty moist there in the ground, and take the panes off when it's time. And
so, are you going to plant anything else soon?
Well, things that can be planted now are seeded outside now, according to a chart that I have here. And I made this chart myself, so this is what I do. I will also be seeding spinach. And with that, I just broadcast it and rake it in lightly with a garden rake or cover it with some compost. And I also will plant potatoes this month. Rule of thumb is when dandelions bloom in the open, it's okay to plant potatoes. And I have seen some dandelions.
I saw daffodils yesterday.
Yeah.
I wonder if daffodils don't work.
Daffodils bloom earlier than dandelions, I believe. So. Okay, we have one call, and we'll get this one in before we wrap. James, you're with the Dirtbags.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about the pollination of pawpaws. There's some traditional wisdom, but I was thinking, is there any vegetarian alternative?
James, I kind of almost want to ask you. I mean, I know what you're talking about, but it sounds funny to people. So maybe you should say what your knowledge is of the pollination of pawpaws.
Well, I guess they're not traditionally pollinated by bees because they bloom really early. Even mason bees aren't particularly attracted to them. I guess carrion flies is what does it. And so people suggest old rotting meat hung up there in the trees.
Yeah, roadkill, you know, we were trying to figure out which was the best one, you know, a skunk or a possum or what kind of, I'm just kidding. Actually, I've been growing pawpaws for quite a long time, and I so far have not had to hang any roadkill or rotting meat in the tree, much to the pleasure of my neighbors and others that might come by.
Well, I've heard, too, on that, you know, that you might give up broken branches to raccoons that or other wildlife that would be climbing the tree to get to the rotting meat.
Well, there you go. But, right. So basically, there are other flies that seem to do that work, and we get reasonable pollination and fruit set on our trees without any roadkill. So I wouldn't be deterred from growing pawpaw. You need two varieties for cross-pollination, so whatever insects are going back and forth will do it. It's not, and it's also not the bloom time. It's really just the getting those insects back and forth because they bloom not so early. It's sort of late.
Have to get them attracted.
And you can do it but by hand, too, which we could explain in more detail. Come to one of the garden shows. I'll tell you about it.
Is that good, Jim? James?
That'll work.
Okay. All right. Excellent, Jim. Thank you very much for your plant of the month, kiwi. Well, if you have gardeners have suggestions, throw me an email of a plant that you'd like to hear discussed in detail. We'll be back in a month.
It's been a pleasure, Glenn.
All right. Thank you, Kurt, our ace engineer. We'll be back.